Chelek Yud Aleph, Parshas B'Shalach, Sicha Aleph. In the ensuing events, Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Egyptians give chase after Bnei Yisrael. And in this week's Parsha, we read the following. Ufarei Hikriv, and Pari drew close. Vayisu Bnei Yisrael Eseinayim, and the children of Israel lifted their eyes. Vihine Mitzrayim Noisea Achareihim. And they behold the Egyptians gaining upon them. Vayiru me'od, and they were very frightened. Vayitzaku bnei Yisrael el Hashem, and the children of Israel called out to God. Rashi selects the word vayitzaku, and they called out, and explains it, saying, Tofsu umanus avesam, umanus avesam. They took hold of the craftsmanship of their fathers. And then Rashi gives examples of this craftsmanship. An example of Avraham in prayer, an example of Yitzchak in prayer, and an example of Yaakov in prayer. In other words, we understand that Rashi is explaining Vayitzaku to mean that they cried out in prayer. The Rebbe questions the need to explain the word Vayitzaku altogether. It seems self-explanatory. The Jews saw that they were in danger and cried out to God in prayer. The verse that follows, our first verse, verse 11, Pasuk Yud Aleph, tells us that they then said to Moshe, "Were there not enough graves in Egypt that you took us to die in the desert? What have you done to us, taking us out of Egypt?" And the Rebbe says, if it was the intention of Rashi to negate the possibility that the word Vayitzaku in our first verse is about Bnei Yisrael crying out against God, crying out in dissent or anger, then Rashi, in his explanation, explaining that Vayitzaku was about prayer, would surely have indicated the word and stated the word Vayispalalu, that they prayed. And yet Rashi does not use the word Vayispalalu, that they prayed, in his explanation at all. On the other hand, if Rashi's explanation is not about their calling out in dissent, is not about negating that they called out in dissent, and indicating that it is about prayer itself. And it's necessary to explain the word, the idea of prayer, Vayitzaku, meaning prayer, the explanation would have better served earlier on in Parsha Shmos, where we read in Perek Beis, Pasuk Chav Gimel, we read the following words, Ve'anchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avida. And the children of Israel were groaning under their bondage. Vayizaku, and they called out, and they cried out. Vata'al shavasam el ha'elekim min ha'avida, and their cry for help from their bondage rose up to God. There, earlier, we have the expression, Vayanchu, and they called out in pain, they cried out in agony. And for us to understand that this was prayer, we would have been better served to have Rashi's explanation there. And yet, there, Rashi does not give this explanation. The Rebbe then continues with an interesting question. The Rebbe asks, what kind of term is this altogether to use in referencing the prayer of our forefathers? Again, Rashi's explanation, Tofsu, Umanus Avaisam, they took hold of the craftsmanship of their fathers. And the Rebbe's question, what kind of a term is this describing prayer? Umanus, craftsmanship. Aside for the fact we know that the craftsmanship of our forefathers was, according to Torah, that they shepherded flocks of sheep. In the Rashi that explains the word Vayitzaku, Rashi continues, as we said, giving us examples of the umanus, of the craftsmanship of our fathers. An example for Avraham in prayer, an example for Yitzchak in prayer, and an example for Yaakov in prayer. The example that Rashi gives for Avraham is a selection of words from the verse that tell us that Avraham returned to the place where he had stood in prayer. An example for Yitzchak is the words Yitzchak went lasuach basode, went out into the field, and an example for Yaakov, the words vayifka b'mokim, Yaakov happened upon the place. So the three terms of omad, that Avraham went back to the place where he had stood, lasuach, to speak in the field, vayifga, that Yaakov happened upon the place. These are three words that the Mefarshim explained to us allude to the idea of prayer. And it seems unclear. Why does Rashi bring psukim or phrases from psukim of examples of our forefathers that are only alluded to in a manner of a hint? Why doesn't Rashi choose to bring other psukim, different phrases, different verses, where there it is very clear that our forefathers are in prayer? For example, regarding Avraham in Parshas Lech Lecha, which is an even earlier example of Avraham in prayer, we have Avraham praying, and the verse says, Vayiven Shom Mizbeach LaHashem, and Avraham built there an altar to God, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, and he called out in God's name. Even more than that, the Rebbe says, in the very example that Rashi does use in Vayitzaku to explain the idea of prayer, in this very example, the words El Hamokai Masher Omad Sham, the example of Avraham in prayer that Rashi chooses, that Avraham returned to the place where he had stood in prayer, is said in the episode of Sdoim and Amora, the episode of the destruction of the cities of Sdoim and Amora, where we know, and the Torah tells us, that Avraham stood at length in prayer on behalf of these two cities. Yet Rashi doesn't use any of those verses, but only uses the verse that comes at the end after the destruction, that only alludes to the fact that Avraham was praying. Same is true regarding Yitzchak, where we find in Parshas Toldos that Yitzchak stood on behalf of Rivka in prayer, in lengthy prayer. The pasuk tells us, Vayetar Yitzchak. Yitzchak stood and prayed at length on behalf of Rivka, his wife, that she be blessed with children, that she be released from her barrenness. And the same is true with Yaakov, whose prayer is very clear in the verse in Parshat Bishalach, where Yaakov, who is going to face Esav, his brother, who is also his enemy, prays to God, Hatzileini na, save me, please, miyad achi, miyad Esav, from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. In all of these verses, it is very clear that our forefathers are standing in prayer. And it is not a matter of verses alluding to prayer and clarification for us on the part of Mefarshim or Rashi. And therefore, the Rebbe says, or questions, why isn't it these clearer examples that Rashi brings? The Rebbe explains by clarifying for us what the question is that Rashi is coming to answer in our Vayitzaku. Why were the Jews standing in prayer and crying out to God? They had a promise from God already that he would bring them into the land of Israel. And they knew that they had left Egypt in a greatly powerful way, even though Egypt was currently chasing them. So it's difficult to understand, the Rebbe says. If they believed in God's promise, if they felt assured by that promise, there was no need to pray. And if they didn't believe, if they were experiencing doubts in God, then why are they praying to God? And therefore, Rashi explains, Tofsu umonus avaysam. They took hold of the craftsmanship of their fathers is not about when our forefathers prayed in a time of need or cried out from a time of despair and that brought them to prayer, but rather the prayer of our forefathers or the prayer of their fathers was simply their umanus. It was a behavior that was constant. It was organic to our fathers to stand in prayer in their relationship with God. And the Rebbe says this was true too to Bnei Yisrael when they stood in the desert, sons to these fathers. They too pray to God, even though they had a promise from God that they would come to the land. They weren't questioning God. This was just an organic expression of who they were as a people and as sons, the children of their fathers, to whom prayer was an organic expression. It was their umanus. It was their craftsmanship. What about the fact that in the second verse that we shared, they do say to Moshe, why you took us out of Egypt to bury us in the desert? Weren't there enough graves in the desert? And it seems that these are words of complaint. And the Rebbe says, in fact, these words were just a natural expression of a person in a time of anguish, that it is natural for an individual, it is human for an individual who finds himself in a moment or in a situation of anguish to express himself in a way that is not his clear-minded general way or usual way of expressing himself. And this doesn't negate, the Rebbe says, it does not negate the fact that their belief and their faith was intact. What an important lesson for us to consider. We find ourselves in precisely the same situation often enough, where we are in a state of anguish or we are struggling with something and we find ourselves calling out to God, perhaps in a way, or questioning what does God have in mind for us, perhaps in a way that we would not express ourselves under calm or normal, so to speak, circumstances. And the Rebbe says they're expressing themselves this way was not a lack of faith. Their faith was intact and their faith was strong. And it was this faith, it was this faith that took them across the sea. And in the merit of the faith of their forefathers, and in the merit of their responding to when God says to Moshe, tell the children of Israel to go forward. They're standing before the sea. And Moshe says, and God says to Moshe, tell the children of Israel to go forward. And with complete faith, they go forward. That faith merited the splitting of the sea. So their faith was intact. And this is why, the Rebbe explains, Rashi chooses to bring specifically verses that are proof of the prayer of our forefathers that were about their umanus, that were about their craftsmanship. The prayer of Avraham in Parshas Lech Lecha, when Avraham built an altar and called out in God's name, was in fact a prayer of thanks. It was a prayer of thanks for the news that he would have a son and that his children would inherit the land of Israel. So too, the prayer that Avraham prayed for the people of Sodom and Amorah, for the cities of Sodom and Amorah. Avraham was trying to save them from the upheaval that was coming. So too for the prayer of Yitzchak in Parshas Toldos, where Yitzchak is praying for Rivka to be blessed with a child. A very specific prayer. And so too for Yaakov, of course, who prays, Hatzileni na, save me, God, miyad achi, from the hand of my brother, Esav. These are prayers that are specific. They are prayers that are in times of need. The prayers that Rashi brings as the umanus, the craft or the craftsmanship of our forefathers, are not about times of need. When Rashi brings the example of Avraham returning to the place Asher Omad Sham, where he stood in prayer, Sodom and Amorah are already destroyed. And Avraham returns to that place and stands there in prayer. Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basoda is not about a specific need. Vayifka Bamokim, when Yaakov happens upon this place, again, not about a need, but there were no specific reasons for which they stood in prayer then. But rather, these prayers were an organic expression of the ongoing bond and relationship between the Avos and Hashem. It was there, in the Rebbe's words, his askus, their busyness, their constant and consistent involvement in their relationship with God that was expressed through prayer. So when we suggested earlier that if there was a need for Rashi to explain the Vayitzaku as prayer, we would have been better served if he had explained this in earlier on in Parshas Shemos, when we read the word Vayitzaku, they called out. In fact, in that earlier example, that prayer was directly connected to the bondage and the anguish that they felt in their bondage. And that is not an example of Tofsu Umonus Avesam. That was a prayer that they called out to God out of their anguish. And in that verse we read, in fact, Vata'al Shavasam Elolokim Min Aveda, and God heard their cry for help from their bondage. The lesson that the Rebbe teaches us from this, from Rashi's question or selection of the Yitzhaku to explain it to us as an organic expression of a Jew, an ongoing part of the relationship between the Jew and God, is as follows. The idea of prayer, and so too the study of Torah, needs to be in a manner of umanus, an organic expression of our relationship with God. What does it mean when we say the umanus of an individual? If you ever observe a scholar walk into a room, you will notice that he will gravitate immediately towards the books in the room. If a carpenter walks into a room, he gravitates organically towards the furniture, peering at the joints, checking out the connections. Observe a jeweler. Cast his eyes upon a piece of jewelry and he wants to inspect it more closely. One's craftsmanship becomes organic to one's nature. And the Rebbe says that for us too, our prayer and our Limud Torah should not be for specific reasons, should not be dependent on need. Rather, when one learns Torah, one should simply be learning Torah just so that one can have this relationship with God through Torah, not so that he could know the hows and the whys, but that the organic desire to connect to God through Torah should become like an umanus. So too in prayer, that one's busyness in prayer shouldn't be for a purpose, for a reason, but rather in a manner where our relationship with God is an ongoing organic conversation, a conversation of umanus. This is what we are busy with. In fact, I think that it's true to say that for a woman is often in constant conversation with God, where our time may be more limited in terms of actual prayer, and we tend to be freer with our speech and better with our communication. And we are, and the Rebbe saying this, allow yourself to be in constant communication and an organic conversation with the Eibishter. And then the Rebbe points out that this is true as well with the work that one does with another. If you are working with someone for whom this conversation does not appear to be organic, it does not appear that prayer or the study of Torah is his umanus, the Rebbe says, it is, in fact, his umanus. However, it's behelem, it is concealed. For every Jew, sons of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, an organic conversation with God in prayer, the organic, ongoing study of Torah or desire to connect to God through Torah and mitzvahs exists. However, it may be concealed, and we need just to redeem it, to reveal it from its state of concealment to its state of revelation.